Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, September 27th, 2011, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Sierra. This evening, we are so pleased to welcome Richard Dolan back to our show. He's the co-author of AD After Disclosure and author of the groundbreaking historical series UFOs and the National Security State, which chronicles the modern UFO age with an emphasis on military encounters and government secrecy. This work has been acclaimed as the finest in history of the UFO phenomenon available in any language. Richard is about to release a new book about UFOs and the 21st century, and he's here to give us a preview, as well as talk about AD After Disclosure, Volume 2. And we're going to have an excerpt from his book in just a few minutes. You may recall the Wake Up Now conference we all went to back in April in Albuquerque, where Richard was a featured speaker, and we had the pleasure of spending some good time with him. He's a remarkable man, and we are so happy to have him back with us tonight. We want to thank Purple Sage and Tammy for hosting the show, the chat room and switchboard, and enabling us to do this show. Purple Sage will forward the questions from our chat room for those who can't call. If you can call, our number is 917-889-8292, then press 1 so we know you have something to say. You can also listen on your computer at blogtalkradio.com/starseed-radio-academy. And please stay on Richard's topics tonight with your questions. If you haven't yet, please click follow on our show page. And if you like the show, tell a friend. We have just passed the 55,000 listens mark, so thanks to all of you for tuning in. On our main site, which is starseedhotline.com, we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our Vault of Knowledge. The entire site is coded for Starseed activation. We also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. Plus, we're on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. Lavendar and Sierra and Richard will be joining us in just a few moments, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. If you'd like our Stage 1 Starseed confirmation, you'll get your natal and progress charts, plus an MP3 of your reading pointing out and explaining your star markings if you have them. Our Stage 2 readings are a one-on-one phone consultation, which is available only after your confirmation if you want to go deeper. And make sure your birth info is exact to the minute and include your place of birth as well as your current place of residence. And don't forget, if you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by requesting your solar return timing. Your manifestational ability is amplified 1,000-fold during those 10 hours, so make the most of it. And now I would like to introduce my co-hosts, Lavendar and Sierra. Good evening, ladies.
Good evening. It's so great to be here with my good, good friend, Richard. How you doing, Richard? This is Sierra.
Hang on.
Hi, Sierra.
Hi. Hang on. The button unclicked. Now it's clicked back. Okay, Richard, you're good to go.
Oh, can you guys hear me?
Yeah, the button unclicked itself, but it's good now.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I'm really glad to be on here, guys.
Well, we are always happy to have you here. Lavendar, I know you're here somewhere. You might want to make sure your phone is unmuted. Before we get started and talking about all the new things that you're doing, Richard, just to catch everybody mm-hmm. up to speed in case somehow, somewhere, someone has not read AD After Disclosure, we have a wonderful audio excerpt read by our good friend Paul Costanzo, and this is the first chapter of AD After Disclosure, The People's Guide to Life After Contact. And I'm going to play this first, and then we will just start right in with your new stuff and what's coming for Volume 2. So here we are, AD, After Disclosure.
Chapter 1, Day 1, The Day Everything Changes. However long the night, the dawn will break. African proverb. That was yesterday. Yesterday is over. It's a different day. Eminem, Love the Way You Lie. White House correspondents are in an uproar. A few hours earlier, the press secretary told them that the president would appear in the late afternoon to make a major announcement on a topic of global importance. This brought howls of protest concerning the lateness of it all, a bit of unfortunate timing that guaranteed missed deadlines and high-stress live shots. Even while jammed into their windowless cramped cubicles and Spartan offices in the basement of the West Wing, these elite journalists from around the world had known for days that something was going on upstairs. They had reported about the late-night comings and goings around other power centers of Washington, D.C., but no reporter broke a story about what it meant. Instead, they tried to draw out the truth from each other without revealing any of their own suspicions. Now, in the James S. Brady press briefing room, the anxiety is palpable. Each of the lucky occupants of the 49 assigned seats claimed their space early to avoid poaching. Meanwhile, the rest of the room is packed, with nearly as many reporters standing on the sidelines. This is not the first time they have been told of an inconvenient forthcoming announcement, but no one can remember one coming this late on a Friday. The reporter for the Associated Press, now seated front row center, scribbles potential first questions. He stops, however, when the correspondent for National Public Radio, seated in the row immediately behind, wonders half-jokingly, to no one in particular, if it matters that the stock market just closed. The news reaches them that the president is on the way. The informal betting pool run by the photographers is closed to new wagers. The short odds now tilt toward military action against a terrorist training camp, followed by a radical new trade deal with China. The acknowledgement of a classified U.S. defense technology remains a long shot that could pay off nicely. The president does not show up alone. He enters with key members of the U.S. Congress, the Secretary of Defense, the Director of Central Intelligence, and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. This assembly of power seems to favor the military angle. Then someone notices that the Secretary of Commerce is also inexplicably standing with the group. The Commander-in-Chief of the United States of America checks his watch and steps up to the familiar podium. After consultation with key members of our defense and intelligence community, the President begins, including the officials accompanying me here at this podium, it has been made clear to me that there is persuasive evidence that the Earth has been and is currently being interacted with by one or more intelligent non-human species. Within a single minute, the world has changed. The president preaches calm, although deep inside he is a bit panicked too. He has only last week learned the details of this reality himself. He explains that recent highly visible sightings of UFOs, including a mass sighting that had been well documented, caused him to demand a full investigation into what the United States government knew on the subject. Despite the issues that disclosure of this fact now obviously raises, I do believe that the people of the United States and the people of Earth have a right to know, continues the president. Because of the need for calm debate, I have taken the precautionary move of making the National Guard available to any state governor who feels that its use is necessary to maintain public safety. Additionally, to protect our nation's economic security, through my executive authority, I am closing the nation's banks for a period of 1 week and ordering the closure of the stock market until further notice. From here, the press conference becomes decidedly more challenging. Under questioning, the president promises an ongoing, transparent review of all classified files dealing with the UFO phenomenon and the ET presence. This is to be supervised by members of Senate and House Intelligence Committees. He even announces the formation of an Office of Contact Affairs. Meanwhile, foreign leaders worldwide have begun to make similar announcements, part of a coordinated effort at disclosure that rolls across the time zones of the Earth. Even the Pope will speak to thousands from his balcony at the Vatican Sunday at noon. The President does not take all the heat alone. This is why he has brought the Secretary of Commerce and the Secretary of Defense to answer some of the pointed questions in the news conference that will follow. That news conference will be the most eventful one the world has ever seen, creating more headlines, spinning off more live shots, and generating more demand for follow-up than anything we have ever seen before or ever will after. This disclosure scenario only serves purposes of illustration. It is possible that the lifting of the veil will not originate in the United States or even involve its elected leader. It could even come courtesy of insiders within the secrecy group itself, who force the issue into the open and take the entire world by surprise. There are many roads that can be taken on the journey to truth. Whatever specific actions precede the announcement, however, the first 24 hours will be like none that have ever existed before. The world has never experienced a planetary event of this magnitude. The existential shock of the Kennedy assassination, the dark impact of 9/11, the reverent awe of the moon landing, none reach the level of this story. The day will become the premier "Where were you?" moment for all people who live through it. For the rest of their lives, they will talk about what they were doing when they first heard the news. History will have a new dividing line, one that heralds the first day of a new world, the end of an old one.
Wow.
Okay, folks, it looks like we've got a little bit of a technical difficulty, so if you can just bear with us for just one moment until we can...
We're good.
Okay, great.
I was just saying, Richard, it's been a while since we heard that, and it gets better every time. My favorite quote from your book is, "When the impossible becomes the inevitable."
Oh, I'm so glad, because it's one of my favorite aspects to the book, and it's really central to the whole concept of disclosure, really. I've often thought of the end of this tremendous, mountain of secrets as an impossibility on the one hand, but also as inevitable on the other. It's that neat kind of a paradox. It's impossible because, really, when you think about it, those groups, those people who have possession of this secret really have no reason. They've got no motivation, as I see it, for them to give this secret up. They've invested too much. It's been now almost 70 years going. How do you give up a secret that's been going for an entire lifetime?
Right.
They've developed a whole bureaucracy of secrecy, a whole system of profit, I believe, from it. They've developed technology because of this in secret that I believe has made them go so far ahead of the rest of us that I don't think that they feel that they can give up this secret. And yet, the fact is that they're not the only part of the equation here. They're not the only game in town. There are the secret keepers, but there's also these others, as Bryce, my co-author, and I call them, whether they're extraterrestrials or other beings that are behind this phenomenon. And then the other factor in the equation is us, our society, we the people. And I really firmly believe that disclosure will become inevitable when the secret keepers are forced into an acknowledgement, and that will happen as a result of our rapidly changing society. It's us that's actually driving this change. Think of the transformations we've gone through in the last 20, 30 years as a culture. It's been dramatic. And obviously the changes are not just going to be stopping in the year 2011. We're going to continue on this track that we're on, this fast track, so that the impossible will become inevitable. And really, to me, the great question is not if it's going to happen, that we're going to get an end to the secrecy, but how it will happen and then what is going to happen as a result of that. I mean, that's the great question of our time is what will happen to our world once that secret comes crashing down?
Well, the longer you hold on to a secret, the harder it gets to hold on to. You know, and I think that, like you said, because there's so many people who are probing, and certainly you are one of them,
right,
and bringing information, and your work is so well documented. I mean, you, to my knowledge, have never put out anything that was not rock solid and backed up with documentation and proof.
Well, I certainly try, and you're referring, I'm sure, to my two other volumes of history. In addition to AD, I've written two other books. There are two parts of what will be a three-part series, that's UFOs and the National Security State, and those are historical works. Each one is 500-600 pages. They've both got lots of citations. I did indeed try to be extremely careful in putting those histories together. And they're a narrative of the UFO reality and cover-up. They try to tell a story, a courageous story, but a cautious one. In other words, I think the information that's in there is very radical, without a doubt, but it could have been even a much more radical book if I weren't so careful about some of the information that I put in. I really did try to be careful. But even what's confirmed about the UFO topic is more than enough to show any skeptic, I think, that this is a real phenomenon. There's something important going on in the skies of this earth, in the oceans of this earth, and indeed out in the atmosphere. Something is going on that does not have an official explanation within our conventional reality, but it's still there. So as a result of putting all of that together and having a very kind of political take on the UFO topic to begin with, I discovered really early on in my career in this field that I was being asked about disclosure. It wasn't something that I initially thought that I was all that interested in. But I would find that people would come to me and ask, well, if you believe in the end of secrecy, which I did, so what does that mean about our society, Rich? How will it happen and what will happen as a result of that? There really wasn't a whole lot of work done on that. And I found myself bumping into this topic more and more. And fortunately for me, I met up with a really good co-author, Bryce Zabel, who's a Hollywood TV producer. He created the show Dark Skies back in the late 90s. He's also been thinking long and hard about this topic, and we developed a very good working relationship, and in the course of 2010, we wrote AD After Disclosure, really just our attempt to answer for the first time, in my opinion, in a non-utopian way, but in a pragmatic way, what actually might happen if UFO secrecy were to end. How would our world be transformed? And what we discovered is it would be rocked in a lot of major ways.
I think that the number of people who are waiting for a higher authority to tell them what is real, those people are really diminishing, because most people today are more adventurous, and they make up their own minds, you know. So just because the government didn't tell me it was real, I can certainly see truth for myself without being led by the hand. And I think,
well, absolutely. I'm very glad you raised this issue, because I think you're speaking to a very important point. I believe, look, we don't need the government to tell us what's true and what's not. Here's where official disclosure is so important, though. It's not because we're getting the word from our political masters about what reality is. The reason on a political level disclosure is so important is because they're not our bosses. We're their boss. And our political system needs to be responsive to the people, or else it's not a democracy or it's not a republic. In other words, we've gone so far away from being a representative democratic type of a system that, you know, we've got developed this major disconnect between what is actually true and what is officially true, so that you have people all around this country, really all around the world, who are experiencing something that is just beyond their understanding, beyond the most incredible thing of their lives, usually. And sometimes they're upset about it. Sometimes they're traumatized. Sometimes they're not. But in all cases, they are within a society where this is, it's almost not, you're not supposed to have these experiences. And one of the big reasons for that is that the governments around the world continue to say, there's nothing to this, it's all nonsense. And so it's these political powers, instead of representing us, are opposing us. In other words, the UFO cover-up is a sign of the failure of democracy. And that is why I believe it is absolutely essential for the political leadership of our country to make this acknowledgement that, yes, it's real. I don't need the president telling me UFOs are real so that I can believe in them. I mean, yes, there are people, there, some people are like that. I'm not like that, and I'm guessing most of the people listening to this show are not like that. But hell, these guys need to respond to us. That's what a representative system is supposed to be about. And because they haven't responded to us, they haven't been responsive to us, that's just that's a symptom of something deeply wrong with our political culture. And that is why I believe, I mean, for many reasons, we need disclosure of the UFO reality. But that's a really important one. So when people say to me, well, Rich, we don't really need the government to disclose it. It's true. I mean, we don't need the government to disclose because we don't need them to tell us what's true. But we need them to disclose to right this ship, which is all screwed up with an entire system that is not responsive to the people. That's what I keep coming back to.
Right, right. And it's not just the UFOs. That's just one branch of the tree, you know, and there are so many other things going on that the symptom replicates all throughout the system.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely right. Yeah, it's one of the things that, you know, since Bryce and I wrote AD After Disclosure, I've continued to really think about this topic. And the more I think about it, the more fascinating it gets to me. One of the key understandings that I've now come to with this is once the truth about the UFO topic comes out, once, in other words, we realize that, yes, we all kind of sort of knew they were lying to us about this, but once it's been confirmed, not only will there be a lot of angry people, and they will be angry, but it's going to start a firestorm of questions about all other elements of our culture in which we suspect we've been lied to. I mean, something that nearly happened 50 years ago, the Kennedy assassination, that'll come back up. That's still important. But then more recent things like 9/11, good grief, that's going to come up in a big way. People will say, you lied about UFOs. Let's see what your 9/11 lies are like, or other topics like chemtrails, or rumors of underground bases and things of this particular sort are going to be on the table in a way publicly that they really aren't today, but they will be. And who knows where that's all going to stop.
I just had this image of like Uncle Sam, and we're all just pulling his pants down. It's like, look, it's time to just, you know, get real here. You know, take off the fake hair, take off all the glad hand stuff, and it's time for a shakedown, really. And that's, I think, when you pull the UFO disclosure thread, that's when Uncle Sam's pants are going to fall down. And it's, you know, where do you stop the unraveling? I think that's one of the obstacles for them. Because it's like, and then you've been using, this mass electromagnetic pacification program, you know, beaming out from HAARP so that we just all leave you alone and go back to grazing in the field, like bovine, people, creatures. But,
sure.
Yeah. And
HAARP,
so
HAARP is one of those programs, too, that will also be questioned without a doubt. HAARP will be questioned in a big way.
As it should. And I think that government officials, if they want to maintain their position of power, they better get back on in the good graces of the people that put them there, because we can take them out, too.
Right.
Although that's
right.
not to say, I mean, we can vote politicians out of office, but there are people in power that were never elected.
Oh, well, absolutely. This is a system that is primed to go up in flames. You know, right after we published AD After Disclosure, within months came the Arab Spring. And you think about how rapidly that all happened. Tunisia was where that action started. That was last February, I believe. No one predicted that Tunisia and then Egypt and then the whole rest of the Middle Eastern, the Arab world there, would go up in flames, so to speak. I mean, that business is not over yet. Syria and Yemen are both teetering right now. And if they are successfully able to transform those governments that are utterly depraved and corrupt and beyond redemption, that's going to be a signal to the rest of the Arab population there to continue on with this fight. I mean, the point is, no one predicted a few months earlier that the Arab world would be primed for massive, true popular demonstrations and indeed revolution against their corrupt leadership. But then, boom, it happened like wildfire. And this is and we can all see it in retrospect. Everyone can see how unstable in reality those regimes are. But we kind of refused to look at it for so long, for year after year after year. The media wouldn't look at it. We just sort of accepted as a political truth. Yeah, the Arab regimes are what they are. Well, suddenly the people decided they weren't going to take it anymore. And incidentally, it's important to for our topic of disclosure to realize what was one of the key sparks of the Arab Spring, which I think can be a spark to UFO disclosure, and that spark was WikiLeaks. It was WikiLeaks, U.S. diplomatic cables that they leaked out, which so angered the U.S. at the time, still has angered the U.S., but it was in those cables that there was a great deal of information about the deep corruption of the Tunisian regime. And as I said, everyone knew it was corrupt, but no one really had laid the cards right out there on the table for everyone to see. And one Tunisian young man who was out of luck, out of work, out of hope, set himself on fire. He set himself ablaze. And that single demonstration was what triggered everything. But it was because of WikiLeaks, I feel, that really was instrumental. Why is that important for UFO disclosure? Simple. There are a number of possible triggers, I feel, that can start the ball rolling toward an inevitable disclosure of the reality of UFOs. But I believe that WikiLeaks or a WikiLeaks type of organization is one of the key ways that this can happen. Another could be a mass sighting, and I can come back to that a little later. But as far as WikiLeaks, consider that WikiLeaks didn't exist 10 years ago. And in fact, it really couldn't exist 10 years ago. We didn't have the global technological infrastructure in place, really, to make a WikiLeaks organization possible. But once we develop the global tech infrastructure for it, it appeared. Here it is. And you know, is one new formidable weapon that we, the people, now have in this battle against this war, against political globalist oppression. Well, we're going to be developing more tools in the coming years, obviously, but WikiLeaks is an important one, and it was important for the Arab Spring, and I think it really can be important for UFO disclosure. It can happen. Well, once it happens, I would just let me finish this thought. Then in the U.S., is it possible that we will see American versions of the demonstrations, like in Egypt's Tahrir Square, for example, when you had a million people gathered and wouldn't leave? day after day? Would they march on Area 51 or S4 or Wright-Patterson Air Force Base or the Pentagon demanding truth on UFOs? Is it possible? Wackenhut security out by Area 51 can stop 10 or 20 people from marching. Can they stop a million? That's when it gets interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So we in this country could very well see very quickly the kinds of protests that we saw in Egypt. Hell, it's happening in Lower Wall Street because of the financial crisis, where, you know, Wall Street's getting demonstrators and they are very slowly getting mainstream attention. The people in this country, in the U.S., are primed to we're like a tinderbox here in the U.S. And the financial crisis can do it, but also the reality of UFO, the revelation of a UFO reality can do it. Unless someone listening doubts this, if they think that the UFOs just are not that important, I would beg to differ, and I could very, very easily explain, I think, why the UFO revelation would, in fact, anger many, many millions of people into political action. I really absolutely believe that that would happen. But I also didn't want to cut you off. You were about to say something. Is that Ariel or Sierra? I couldn't tell.
I think Sierra was about to say something. Were you, Sierra?
No, actually, I think it no, it wasn't me.
Okay.
Well, hey, Sierra.
Hi, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. I just want to give a shout-out to my buddy over there. So good to hear your voice.
Oh, it's great to hear yours, too.
Good.
Well, Sierra, did you not have a comment at this time, so, or do you?
I do, actually. I think that the most important thing that I've heard you say so far, Richard, and you and I stand on the same point, is we are millions to hundreds. We, the people, are the ones that are going to call for the changes. If we peacefully take action by marching and demanding change, they can't ignore us. But if we keep deferring, and waiting for somebody else just to pick up the ball and roll, it won't ever happen, and we'll continue to be in the same place that we are now. So in my opinion, it's, you know, and in my, I'm always out there encouraging people to take a step forward in a peaceful manner. But if all of a sudden a million people just walked out on and marched on Washington or their capitals or anything like that, it would gain quick attention. And it's what's going to take to actually get the ball rolling. As you said, we saw, you know, with the overseas, with the different countries that are actually starting to be forced to come to the table and make the changes that the people themselves are calling for. That's how we're going to get it done here.
Absolutely. The only way to enforce or to, you know, keep our freedoms is by fighting for them. No one's going to hand this over to us. We don't have to speak up, use our voices, use our feet in a nonviolent way. That's absolutely key. And I think in that way we can maintain our own integrity and also force positive change ahead.
Well, we will be having help because, I mean, as you were talking, I was kind of tracking some other things, putting in the astrological piece of the puzzle, because we have been in the age of Pisces, and for, you know, those of our audience that are familiar enough with astrology to know that Pisces is about illusion, deception, visions, it's, you know, smoke and mirrors. You know, appearances without, without grounding, or, and then as we move, and secrecy and corruption and all those things were inherent in this era, and now the tide itself is taking us and kind of giving momentum as these people become aware of certain things, whether it's through WikiLeaks or through people in other parts of the world going, look, we did it, you can do it too. But the Age of Aquarius is beginning officially next year, but the shift has already started. And it is a time when all those houses of cards built on lies and deception must collapse. And this is bigger than our planet. I mean, this is like, you know, an astronomical as well as an astrological era. So when we add our voices to the current, the tide that is already going in our direction, we are not without a lot of help on the, you know, on an unseen, on an energy level. So,
well,
that's
okay.
All I mean about that.
that's quite interesting. And you know, as a guy whose training is as a historian, I don't study astrology. But I will tell you, I don't know if I've ever mentioned this, I've had my astrological chart done because people now, you know, say, well, let me do. I had a friend who had this very, very good astrologer who I've never met in person, who's never met me. But we have a mutual friend, and this friend gave my information to this person, assured me that she had given no specific information about me whatsoever, just my birth information and my first name. And I will say that this astrologer, and I trust my friend that this was the case, that I was anonymous, this astrologer absolutely nailed me in describing the kind of person that I was, at least that's how I felt. And also did the chart of my son, who at the time was 9 years old, and nobody knew about my son, about, you know, his personality and things like this. And this astrologer nailed him too. So I was really very impressed, I gotta tell you. To this day I don't understand the true science or logic as to why that worked, but I won't knock it. But I don't practice it. But I will say that I do think that in a real sense, we as a civilization have some real opportunities ahead of us, but also some great dangers. So that, in other words, we've got a real chance for a truly wonderful era ahead of us, and we also have a chance for a much darker era, and we have to stay vigilant. By a wonderful era, I'm simply referring to the fact that we are transforming ourselves so rapidly, first of all, in our technology. And we can come back to awareness and consciousness in a moment here. But in our technology, that's a big part of what's driving us forward, I think, as the global tech revolution that's going on all around us. I mean, think about how you're able to have this show. You know, this type of a show was not possible prior to the age of the internet. And even in the last 5, 6, 10 years, we have developed technologies that allow us to communicate on a global scale in ways that really were just never thinkable before. So the world is truly tying itself, weaving itself more and more together. And that allows people who are doing the, you know, compatible research to coordinate their efforts much better. And all of that is very, very good. And it allows the people to get the best tools possible with which to fight oppression. My concern is that as we move further ahead on that basis, the tools on the other side are also quite substantial. Among these are the tools of the entertainment industry, which I think have served very, very effectively to trivialize our lives, to divert us, the people, from the real issues of importance in this world. Another problem is the food and drug industries, which have created a kind of a zombie nation here in the U.S. and to a large extent abroad. The foods that we're eating are the processed foods that we're eating are really poisonous and toxic to us, to our bodies as well as our minds, I feel. Mm-hmm. So we're fighting against some odds here. And so, in other words, the fear would be that we move into even more of a matrix type of reality than we already are. Basically a nation of drugged up, drugged, obese, unhealthy people who are watching entertainment all the time and really have not developed the tools to challenge the real structure of power. And those tools require persistence and knowledge and the desire to do all of this. And unfortunately, there's a tremendous amount of wherewithal on the other side of this fence. I mean, these guys, they know what they're doing. They know how to manipulate people. Human beings, you know, we're not robots. We're people. We respond to different types of manipulation, unfortunately. And those guys understand that so well. So my fear is that, you know, on the one hand, we are moving toward an era in which we, the people, really can join together and effectively fight to correct the gross imbalances in our society. On the other hand, I have concerns also that the bad guys can win, at least for a while.
Well, it would be the illusion of winning. It would have to be because there've been, and I don't remember the name of the I don't know if it's a psychologist or a scientist who determined that if only 10% of the world's population were unified in harmony and purpose, that would be enough to tip the tip the scales in a new direction. That it really doesn't have to be everybody in the world, but only a very small percentage to dominate the global consciousness, because we have so much more power than we think we do, just with our will and our intent. And if that were a million people, not even having to be in the same place at the same time, but with your intent in the same place at the same time, that has a lot of power too. But to back up a little bit, I was thinking about when you were talking, when I go walk my dogs every evening, and I go up and down the streets of my neighborhood, and I look, and you know, it's kind of dusky and dark. Every single living room, you can see the TV, and you see the people sitting in front of the TV, and it's almost like, you know, like being in a Twilight Zone movie. And I'm looking,
right,
and thinking, oh, my God, this is just one little neighborhood and one little street, and this is, you multiply that times the whole country, and there's, I mean, when you look at a television, there's certain parts of your brain just automatically turn right off, and you kind of do go into that zombie mode.
Yeah.
And that is probably they're one of the most powerful tools, because if you saw it on TV, it's real. Otherwise, it wouldn't be on TV, right?
Yeah, well, right, exactly. Yeah.
I saw that on TV. Yeah. Well, so tell us about, you're doing is it a volume 2 of AD or a sequel?
Well, I'll tell you how all the projects I'm working on. Bryce Zabel and I are the authors of AD. I think down the road we will do a new, like, greatly revised edition of AD. We've really talked about this maybe every number of years to create like a new version of the book to sort of keep it current. But no, that we're not really going to do right now. I'm working on a separate book myself, which is an independent project altogether. In addition also to my first two volumes of History of UFOs and the National Security State, I am working on that third and final volume, and that will take the story of UFOs from 1992 to the present day. But there's another book that I'm doing, which I expect to have done in a couple of months. It's so new that I'm not really sure I've even finished the title of it. I'm thinking of calling it UFOs for the 21st Century Mind. And really what I'm working on is what I think of as a fresh approach to the topic of UFOs and ET reality. The introductory reader, but also I think for an experienced reader, but certainly for someone who really wants to know what is important about the whole UFO subject, why does it matter? But to do it in a way that's more than just some of the same old, tired, old, kind of almost cliche approaches that have been taken to this topic in the past. When I think of the changes that have gone through UFO research over the last 20, 30 years, I feel that this is an important element for me to incorporate in a new study of ufology. So I'm writing a book. I've got a good chunk of it already finished. I think it'll be done, as I say, in a few months. And I'm excited about it. In fact, I worked a little bit more on it today. I wish I had it finished so I could tell you all about it right now. But it deals with the whole topic, you know, as far as like what are UFOs, what constitutes evidence of UFOs? I mean, the fact is that most of the things that we see in the sky that we think are UFOs usually turn out not to be. We all kind of know that. You know, a lot of the philosophy, I guess, of the UFO phenomenon I deal with a little bit. But then I get into a lot of the history, the theories of ancient visitation, and then all of the pre-1947 UFO sightings. There's a lot of UFO sightings that are in this book, but there's a lot of political analysis, the cover-up, the deeper analysis of what I've come to call a breakaway civilization. I've got chapters on one chapter on contact and abduction. So, in other words, really looking at all aspects of human interaction with these other beings, whether they have claims of having been taken or claims of being in channel communication with them, and any other type of contact we can think of. I'm really trying to think about that, understanding the telepathic nature of communication that we often hear about between us and them, and what does that mean? What does that mean about what types of beings they are and what types of beings we are? I'll be talking a lot about theories of who and what they are. What are these beings? Are they men and women from another planet? Are they androids from another planet? Are they from another time? Are they from another dimension of reality? What are their intentions? And I really want to handle this in a way that's contemporary and somewhat sophisticated. And then I've got a couple of chapters on, well, exactly. I think there's a lot of variety to this experience, and it's something that I just would like to do justice to. I also have another chapter on what I'm calling other oddities, whether they're crop circles, mutilations, or places that I call vortices, like the Skinwalker Ranch or the James Gilliland Ranch, places where there's just a constant ongoing amount of activity. What is it about these places? And I'll be wrapping up the book with the chapters on the movement for disclosure. I guess some of that might even include AD after disclosure. And then a final chapter into the future. You know, what can we expect in the future with all of this? So I'm really in the midst of doing it. And I've got a number of the chapters done. It won't be a super long book. I think it'll be 250, 300 pages, you know, respectable length. And my hope is that it serves as a really great jumping off point for an interested reader to really revisit a topic that almost today seems kind of passé. You know, when we think of UFOs, there's a lot more exciting topics actually that people talk about, whether it's the conspiracy or conspiracies or other issues of contact between us and them. I mean, that's going to be a big part of the book, but I want to get the whole topic of UFOs and the growth of ufology itself. The study of this topic, I think, is a very fascinating element of it, and that'll get its chapter as well. So it's all coming together. I think in a couple of months it should be done and coherent, and I'll be able to talk about it a little bit better.
Well, that's great. And the minute you have it available for the public, you'll have to come back and give us all the where to go and how to obtain it. And, you know, we have so many of our audience has already read AD After Disclosure, and people that are new to our community, that's just a matter of course. It's like, here's your starseed tool belt. You need to take your silica, you need to follow your transits, and you need to read AD After Disclosure. And it's part of the starseed tool belt. And as you know, I mean, our whole radio show, our website, our forum, everything is for people who are, you know, children of, descendants of, or incarnated extraterrestrials in from various civilizations. So we're like the wide open.
Let me add two things on that matter. I mean, I think that's very, very interesting that you're saying this. I guess this is a very forward-looking show that you have developed, and AD is a forward-looking book. So I do see that there's this very strong compatibility, and that makes me very happy. You know, I'm very intrigued by the idea of people being basically from having souls that are from elsewhere. Now, this is not something that I really write a lot about, but I will just tell you that I strongly believe in the existence of a soul that all of us have. And I happen to believe in multiple lives. This is just a matter of personal belief. I don't pretend that I have knowledge in a strong way, but it's something that I think is in fact the case. So that we are born, we live, we die, and frequently we can be born multiple times. And what's to say that all of the souls that have come into being on this earth are originally from this earth? Well, really, logically, why should there be any reason? So I've met many, many people who, of course, and many who listen to this show, but I've personally talked to many folks who have told me in detail why they believe they are not from here and why they are from elsewhere. And I respect that. I think that there's no reason why that can't be any more than that, you know, we're all reincarnated and we've all been humans and all on this earth. Well, why? Why is that the case? Why couldn't we have been from somewhere else? The other thing that I'll just add is that in my own investigations into the deeper cover-up, I've spoken with a number of inside people, and I realize that always sounds kind of goofy. Yeah, I've talked with an insider, but I have talked with a few individuals that I believe are deep insiders, and my sense is that they take that concept very seriously, the idea of star seeds. I've had that sense from more than one person, that they also believe that there are people who are born here and they're monitored by those groups that they come from. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a kind of monitoring process going on there.
Oh, completely. And I don't know if you have ventured that far into how we do star markings, but Lavendar discovered the star marking codes that are used uniformly. You know how we have like standardized sizes of nuts and bolts, and you know all CDs have to have a hole this big. Well, there's a standardized set of numbers and frequencies, just like music. It's universal that at least on this planet. On this planet, A is 440, and out in the universe, A is 432. It's a standardized unit of measure. 12, 11 are discovered that there are certain, she calls codes, but there are certain degrees, like 25, 26, and 27 degrees of any sign when the of any planet at 25, 26, or 27 is like a little gateway that opens up where these beings come and go. And this was proven, demonstrated to her, not only by the other off-world beings, namely the Pleiadians in her case, but she met a man who did a life's work and wrote a book on the astrology of genius. And he had done 427 astrological charts of Nobel Prize winners.
All different
fields. And she went to a lecture and was fascinated, and she asked if she could look at the charts. So after the lecture, she went and she looked at 427 charts. It took her most of the night. And what she discovered was alarming, that over 400 of these prize winners were either born with a 25, 26, 27 degree marking. No, all three conditions. They were born with the 25, 26, 27 degree markings. They received their prize when a planet was at galactic degree, 25, 26, 27, and they died with those markings. It was an entrance, a peak, and an exit point, all marked by these same galactic frequencies. And, of course, when she saw that, she had to go lie down for about 2 days because it really rocked taking what she already knew. This little seed instantly became a giant oak tree in its ramifications and tracking on down the line. So galactically, yeah, it is possible to track these people on the planet that have come because, as I have said before, if you're an ET and you're on the spaceship and your friend's energy is going to go down and go into the third dimension, and because you can, it's easier to affect change from the inside. A stranger can't come in and say, hey, you guys are doing this all wrong. But one of us can stand up and say, I have a dream, and change the course of the
mm-hmm.
African-American standing in the United States. Well, they're going to send them down, and they're not going to leave them without a method of communication. And this frequency is the method of communication from the ship to the ground forces. So that's
those people are not aware explicitly. I mean, on this theory that they are such emissaries, I assume that right. Or I mean,
a
is
lot,
it
well,
is
they're,
it contended that
there are common
is it contended that they know. Mm-hmm.
There are some people that have always known who they are. There are other people that they exhibit a multitude of characteristics, mainly just feeling like you don't fit in, you're lonely, and you want to go home. You feel like you were adopted or, switched at the nursery in the hospital,
going with
your family. There's a lot of things like that. And then there's the abilities, the psychic abilities. You touch something and you just know it. There is a lot of inherent, innate knowledge, abilities, and just knowing about the way it is in another reality. And there are more and more. And I'll tell you, most of our audience are of that group that are awake. They do know. And they're working towards a common goal of unity of purpose.
Well, I'm very sympathetic to what you're saying here. I truly am, and I think I agree with it. From my perspective as a researcher, it's always critical that I find a way to write about something so that it would be acceptable to someone who's an open-minded skeptic. I'm always thinking,
right.
that type of an audience.
Right.
So, and I have tremendous respect for Lavendar, having met her and, well, all of you guys about half a year ago. Was it half a year ago? About 5 months
ago,
right? Wow.
It was the end of April, uh-huh.
Yeah, I just really developed so much respect for all of you, and Lavendar is just such an intellectual force. You know, that she really developed these insights about this. I guess from my point of view, I would be interested in exploring that further and really mm-hmm. looking at all of that. Not being an astrology expert, I'd have to defer to someone who's able to read those charts. But
if we all had the same skills, nothing would get done. And what you do is, you know, you're a researcher and an historian, and you deal in provable facts, and you may have your, you know, theories, hypotheses, and conjectures, but when you write in your books, you are about documentation and fact. And that's really, really important because,
right.
I mean, somebody could look at a true skeptic, closed mind, bovine type could look at Lavendar's discovery of star markings and just dismiss it as delusional. And of course, we don't really care what they think in the first place because we know what we know. But to take a book that
we run a great risk, right?
Mm-hmm.
We run a great risk in this world. I'm talking of basically the kind of materialist scientific point of view of assuming that we've really figured out the nature of reality and that all of this crazy new agey stuff should just be tossed into the dustbin. That's a huge mistake. Look, if you go back through human history at any point, if you put a little map of the human chronology up on your wall and you throw a dart, wherever that dart lands, I guarantee you, you'll land in an era where people held ideas that, you know, later they discovered, gee, that really may not have made a lot of sense, did it? or was really inadequate. Our history is full of this. We've been wrong about almost everything at one point or another. And now suddenly, though, after all these thousands of years of being wrong about this, that, and the other thing, but now we think we've got it all right, that we have no more mysteries to solve, that there are no possibilities. For example, that the human mind has an ability to affect reality around it, or that there are other dimensions of reality. Do we really think that we've got that all solved? Scientists who believe that they can just discard all of this type of evidence to the contrary of their restricted worldview. I mean, they're doing
right.
is harming themselves. They're just harming themselves.
Right. Well,
I think there's a lot more that we have to learn.
They spent so much time constructing the box and crawling inside that any changes to the box would be most uncomfortable. Exactly.
Yeah. Well said.
So there were periods of time when people were arrested for heretical ideas like the world is round, you know, we are not the center of the universe, and people would be, I mean, they'd be arrested. It was heresy.
Get a load of this. I just spent the last weekend in Irvine, California, for the Awake and Aware conference, which was run by Project Camelot. That's Bill Carey and Bill Ryan and Carrie Cassidy. One of the presenters there, in addition to myself, was Graham Hancock, who I really admire and we're good friends. Graham, of course, years ago wrote the classic book Fingerprints of the Gods, which is a reinterpretation of our ancient history. And more recently, he's just gotten into some fascinating issues of human society and how we can liberate ourselves from the mental shackles that we live in. But one thing that Graham pointed out during his lecture just the other day, reminding us really, was that not long ago, during the Middle Ages, even the late Middle Ages, it was illegal for a person to own a copy of the Bible. You couldn't own a Bible. Because if you did, you would have the ability to interpret that document on your own. So you weren't allowed to read it.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know that.
No, right, exactly. But the whole point, of course, of control, I mean, that's what it all came down to in that society. And we haven't abandoned this. We still are in a society where there's a very small number of people at the apex of everything, and they feel that they need to control us, not just our physical activity, so that we get up early, go to work, be the busy little worker bees that we are, make a couple of bucks so that we're happy enough, veg out, spaz out watching TV, and go to sleep. No, they want to control our mind as well. They want to control really our souls to the extent possible. They really do, because they realize that they're not fully going to control our bodies unless they control our minds and our souls. And so the control has to be total. But they can't do it in the heavy-handed, old-fashioned way of the Spanish Inquisition or, you know, the Third Reich so much, or they'd rather not have to make it that heavy-handed. So what they do now is they're much more sophisticated. They seduce us with mass media. I mean, that's really what it's all about. And in so doing, they deaden our thought, our capability for independent thought. And as I indicated earlier in the show, they pump us up with drugs and poisonous processed foods, so that we're really unable or less able to have the wherewithal to fight them to begin with. When you're busy watching Monday Night Football or Judge Judy or American Idol or Dancing with the Stars or, you know, whatever, how the hell are you supposed to do the hard, laborious work, and that's what it is, of getting yourself educated and fighting this damn system and educating others and turning on their light bulbs? It's difficult. You got to push out all the bad stuff first, and if you don't have the level of consciousness that there is even this problem, then you got no chance. I mean, when we talk about consciousness, this is where the battle is taking place. This is where the rubber meets the road. It's in our living rooms. It's the battle for the consciousness of the fact that there is a problem to begin with. And the more and more we watch the TV or mindlessly surf the internet, you know, whether it's playing solitaire or games or whatever. I mean, I realize we all need a break. Everyone needs a break. But the problem is when we just get sucked right into that world, because it's a world of control. It's a world designed to control our bodies, our minds, and our souls. And the first rule in us to be awake and to be conscious is to realize that that's going on, so that we can have a chance of fighting it successfully. Otherwise, we're just sleepwalking our way through lives, like truly like zombies. In the sense, what is a zombie? You know, in voodoo, it's someone who's controlled by drugs and hypnosis and whatever to be like a slave. And in a way, how different is much of our society? Maybe not so different.
Right, right. Well, just because we don't look like, you know, the green skin and the the Hollywood
exactly.
Version. Yeah, right. We're very well dressed. We're very well dressed zombies. And
there you go.
And we appear to be in total control with our little piece of plastic card that can get anything that we want.
Right.
And it's the illusion.
Maybe one day soon to be a chip, right?
Right, right. It's the illusion of power that technology gives us. And it's really, of course, the upside, couple of good points that I was thinking while you were talking is, number one, the starseed people are very, very sensitive to the bad food and the bad drugs. So
yes,
they can't really partake. They can't partake. You know, they're very sensitive to chemicals. So starseed really do have to have a very clean, preferably organic type diet. And also the That's why the use of silica is really important to help offset the electromagnetic radiation that we're all exposed to all the time. And cell phones and the BlackBerry, whatever telephones that hook you up to the internet. I walk
right.
around and you just see people everywhere. It's like with their thumbs on this thing, thumbs, and they're completely unaware of the most gorgeous bird or flower because they're like the zombie, you know, on this with their thumbs and the thumbs, or they're on their phone, or it's amazing. But starseed are a little bit. Protected, but they're just have an aversion to that stuff, and they have a bad reaction to the things that are meant to control them, so they walk away from it. But the other thing I wanted to ask you is that a system so inherently flawed, although our government is built on the most amazing document in history, we've gotten so far away from that Ben Franklin and the boys are probably rolling over in their graves, but the system has gotten so far out of balance that it cannot endure. Because I believe I know that balance is the nature of the universe, and we're not separate. It's not all of the universe, and then there's Earth. So the government and the secrecy and the lies and the corruption and all that stuff, it has to fall. It has to fall. And so it only takes a little bit of...
Well,
a
I agree.
We don't really have to... you've been really diligent in putting out the information to empower people to go and fight against this, because it's wrong and it's unjust. But I don't think it'll take quite as much effort as one might think, because the system is already wobbling. Just your example in the Mid East,
right.
Those systems were way out, and they toppled easily. So,
they did, the only thing is it took them many years to do. I mean, they were corrupt for a long, 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 long time, and then suddenly when it was time, the pressure is on all at once, and that game is not over, not by a long shot. And here also in the U.S. or in the Western world in general, yes, the system is primed to have a major upheaval. You know, right now we're in the midst of a financial crisis that is not over, not even close to being over. And most analysts are fearful that things are going to get much worse. I just posted earlier today on my Facebook page a really unsettling interview that was done on the BBC just yesterday. It's up on YouTube, and I reposted it from a private trader, not someone who works for large corporations, but he does trading on his own. And BBC financial team interviewed this guy, and he was remarkably candid, frighteningly candid, really, about how the global financial collapse is coming. Goldman Sachs rules the world. It's not the U.S., not any nation. And talked about how traders, everyone can see the writing on the wall, and everyone's like rats jumping out of the sinking ship, getting out of the euro. If the euro collapses, which some fear that this is a real distinct possibility that it can happen, economic contraction overseas won't be just 5 or 10%. It's feared to be 25, 30, 35, 40% of the economy, which would be just catastrophic for them, for us, for everyone. And with a situation like that, when you have a global financial crisis in which there is so much economic misery, my gosh, who could tell what's going to be on the other side of that tunnel? When you get great crises like these, people get angry, and all kinds of information comes out. One of the insights that I gained in my historical study of the UFO cover-up is that UFO information often is leaked out or comes out during periods of great political crisis. So, for example, in the aftermath of Watergate here in the United States, we received a great mass of UFO information that came out as a result of the Freedom of Information Act. And that was a direct result of Watergate, the strengthening of Freedom of Information Act. And that led to a great release of UFO data. In China, after Mao Zedong died, after all those years of being the head of the Communist Party there, suddenly in China, there was a spate of released information about UFOs and an opening. When the Spanish dictator Francisco Franco died in the 70s in Spain, that also resulted in a great release of UFO data. And probably most dramatically, during the fall of the Soviet Union about 20 years ago, there was a window of about 2-3 years where there was a tremendous amount of Russian UFO reports and intelligence documents and so on, that these were released. In other words, political crisis makes everything unstable, and it often results in the release of key UFO documents. My feeling is that the United States has been primed for quite some time for a political readjustment and a major political crisis, and that crisis can very easily come from the financial crisis that we're seeing. And so that this global financial meltdown, which is evident to anyone with eyes to see, is very likely to lead to further political crises, and this in turn can lead to very difficult revelations on the UFO topic. And I say difficult from the point of view of the ruling elite. It'll be difficult for them to defend this, in my view. I think that some very, very damning information is ready to spring out.
Well, I think that, do you think that sometimes in order to distract the public's attention from one thing, they'll throw you a UFO bone or something, you know, something else to, there was some
yeah,
stuff
I wonder,
going on.
Yeah, I often wonder about this idea. So that, in other words, you know, how do the powers that be use the UFO topic in the mass media? When you watch something on television that portrays UFOs, what's really going on behind the scenes? There's a widespread belief, and I've never fully been comfortable with it, of using the UFO topic as a way to prepare the public for general acceptance of it. I don't actually rule this out entirely, but it doesn't really, it doesn't make sense when I look at the major networks, because the treatment of the major networks of this topic, whether it's TV or newspaper like the New York Times, Washington Post, the major media, the important establishment media, has unwaveringly been negative, even to this day. And this is absolutely doubly true with the UK media, which I think is even more intransigent, if possible, than the US media on the topic of UFOs. I mean, they're constantly dismissing this, making fun of it.
Mm-hmm.
When they trot out UFO stories on major network news, my sense is that it's usually in a dismissive way to disable the topic from getting any forward traction. Now, it is true that this subject does make it to cable news, like on cable programming, like the History Channel, of course, has done Ancient Aliens to great effect. It's been very, very successful, popular. And there's been a number of documentaries, quite a few of which I've been on myself, that have treated the UFO phenomenon in a very serious way. But these are cable, and the question is, are they following a political instruction, or are they simply responding to what they've discovered gives good ratings? I mean, UFO programming generally gives very good ratings. I think it's the latter. I think what's happened is that networks have realized that there is some money to be made in UFOs. So on a limited basis, on the cable stations where the stakes aren't as high, they will engage in some pro-UFO programming. But you'll notice none of the UFO documentaries out there, really none, truly deal with the deep political ramifications of the cover-up. They're all, it's the same old nonsense. It's all like, oh, gee, I wonder if they're here. Could they be? Here's a couple of really good cases. Wow. And then you scratch your head and think, wow, I guess maybe the aliens are here. But then without the show really getting into what really matters, and what really matters is, holy crap, this is not only real, but your government's been lying to you about it, Jack. And what does that mean? That means that there's this substantial conspiracy in place. Let's use that word. It's a conspiracy. Uh-huh. Yes, we're so used to laughing at that word. It's been so effectively disabled. It's been emasculated for its true meaning. You think about it. Conspiracy is a serious, serious thing, and it's been turned into a damn joke by our media. And so when we deal with the UFO topic on even on History Channel, even when I've been interviewed, I can tell you right now, every time I get interviewed, I always hit the cover up. I always talk about it. And that almost never really gets included. When my remarks have been on there, yes, I mean, I'll talk about political ramifications here and there, but I can tell you right now, I've said much stronger stuff for the cameras that have just never made it. Mm-hmm. You know, the UFO topic is still so lukewarm in the way that it's being handled. I mean, really, I almost don't even bother watching them anymore. They bore me. I mean, I know all about that case history. It's not like I'm learning anything new there. What will interest me is when they start dealing with the true, deep political implications. And I'm trying to wonder if I'm taking us far afield because I don't remember what we were just talking about. Well, so I'm sorry about that if I went too far.
No, it's valid. And you're right. I hardly ever watch UFO programs because they always make sure that they end up with a question mark so that they want to be non-committal.
Yeah. And it's he said, she said all the way. That's all they do. That's the best they can do.
But
they can't get committal.
The purpose is to desensitize people to the idea so that they don't go totally off when they do find out.
Yes.
You know, and the same with Hollywood.
Right.
And that's all, you know, Hollywood and books and the media, all the so-called fictional works are there to desensitize us, to get us ready, to give us a chance to taste it without, you know, without having to swallow it. You know,
I think that you're right on this matter, actually.
Yeah, I do.
If we were members of the Bilderberg group, let's say that we're the powerful, important people, the people whose opinions, met our policy, for example, we might be thinking about this, and we might be looking at, where public awareness is on this and where we think we need it to be in the next 10 years. And we might just quietly agree that, there needs to be a little more public awareness, because how do you change public awareness other than really through mainstream media is probably their most effective tool. So they might encourage programming in this or that direction. I can see that. What really is lacking from a historian's point of view is simply access to documents that really make the case. But certainly I agree that it is something that would make some sense.
Oh, yeah. It's completely plausible that the government will test out things through Hollywood, you know, and see what the public reaction would be. It's almost like a dress rehearsal or a focus group kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly... everything I ever needed to know, I learned from watching Star Trek. There's a book by that title. Everything
is that right?
Everything I need to know, I learned watching Star Trek.
Well, I have to confess, I was a huge fan of Star Trek, the original series. Totally, all the overacting by Shatner. I didn't care, man. I just love Star Trek.
Yeah, not about
that.
The greatest because
show.
It was making a statement, and it was so just so far ahead of its time. But there are, I mean, even the newer, you know, the Next Generation, they did episodes about First Contact, and it was exactly. Did you see that one? Where they
I used to watch
forces
Next Generation. I was a fan of that show, and I think I recall the episode you're talking about.
Right,
vaguely.
And they had they had to send people before they made contact to find out, you know, because it was a dangerous mission, because you can never undo it. You have to make really sure because you don't want consequences.
I do recall. Wasn't that where they had like a they were embedded in a mountain, and they had a hologram that was covering that, so it looked like a mountain, but then somehow it malfunctioned, and one of the locals saw them?
Right, right. Well, that's called Who Watches the Watchers. That was about anthropological study. The one that I'm talking about was called First Contact, and it was the B.B. Wentworth, the gal that played Lilith on Cheers. She was the one that was one of the key guest stars in that episode. But
probably
but
not
anyway,
remembering that.
We're really getting off the point. We've got some people on the switchboard with some questions, and I'm glad to see that the chat room is now open. Purple Sage was having trouble getting in to the chat room, so heads up, Purple Sage, we're going to be coming and seeing if we have any questions for Richard Dolan.
Great.
From the chat room. And before we move on, I do want to say that you can get AD After Disclosure at Richard's website. It is afterdisclosure.com. What a great domain name. And you can order it there. And if you haven't, please do. And we are going to move right now to we have one caller on the switchboard, and then I'm coming to the chat room. Okay. First of all, we're going to talk with Ralph. Hello, Ralph. You are on the air. Do you have a question or comment for Richard Dolan?
Hi. Thank you very much. Richard, I've read your book and have advised other people to read it. And
thank you.
I heard you on Coast to Coast and with Bill and Carrie. I even heard you on this program before, which is, I think, right before I bought your book. But it's a pretty good a documentary, and it brings up some real good scenarios of what if, and I think it's very well put together. However, I was just
wondering,
since you've published that book, have you received any kind of threats or anything like that from the powers that be, number one? And number two, in your sequel or your follow-up or whatever other material you're going to write on in relation to that topic, had you thought about including some of the information that has come from whistleblowers about the Dulcie incident in 1947 crashes, the government supposed involvement in 1954 with President Eisenhower, those kind of things.
Right. Hello? Was that me? I hope not.
Well, I don't know who it was. But anyway, maybe,
okay.
Maybe they didn't like the question. Could you address those things?
I'd be very happy to, and thanks for asking them. First, your first question was whether I've received any threats or harassment of any sort. Not since writing AD After Disclosure, which just came out not quite 1 year ago, but I would say that over the years, I've been public in this field for a little over a decade, and I have absolutely had events in my life that I consider harassment. It's hard to prove any single one of them. Probably the most distinctive would be that for two solid years, my name was flagged at every airport I flew out of. Could never get an answer out of TSA, just asking them. But I would go to the desk to fly, and I fly frequently. And my name would be on some list. It wasn't a no-fly list. I think it was on a jerk-him-around list. I don't know what they call it. They would have to make a phone call to approve me for flying. I'd have to wait 15, 20 minutes until they did that every single time I flew. Frequently during that period of time, this is around 05, 2004-05. My luggage often was diverted to Dulles Airport in Washington and opened up and rifled through and stuff missing and broken. That happened on a number of occasions. So I consider that harassment. I think I was being singled out. I was never directly threatened. I was never directly, I was told by sympathetic insiders that I had to watch my back. But I was also told by sympathetic insiders that they were watching my back, for what it's worth. Probably the worst thing, though, that I am very suspicious about to this day was the fact that 1 month before I finished my second volume of history, the UFOs in the National Security State, and, you know, keeping this was a 5-year project of a 600 plus page book. It took so much out of me to write that book. 1 month before I was ready to put that to print, both of my computers, 1 day apart from each other, died. My laptop and my desktop both died, and it was the same way. They both just continually were rebooting. I couldn't access anything in my computer. Thank God that my primary hard drive by then was my 8-gig flash drive. So I had all of my books, all of my data on that drive, and I didn't lose anything. Had I not had a flash drive, I would have lost, I think, I could very likely have lost 5 years of work, and I don't know if I would have ever been able to redo that project, honestly. And I can only be suspicious. I can't really prove that it wasn't just bad luck, right? But I'm not an idiot with my computers. I've been operating them for over 20 years. I think I'm relatively good with them. And then the other thing was I used to have a bunch of vans hanging out in front of my house, and they were suspicious. And long story short, one of them took off as I was about to approach it. And then that was the end of it. So who knows? To answer your other questions. The Dulles, a lot of what you've mentioned, I have written about at length, actually. I have written 2 volumes of history. They're big, fat books. You know, I would recommend go and look for UFOs in the National Security State. And yes, I am available at afterdisclosure.com, but my primary website where I offer those books is keyholepublishing.com. If you just Google my name, Richard Dolan, you'll find it. My point is simply UFOs and the National Security State does deal in as comprehensive a way as I can do with the history of this topic and all of its, a lot of its, you know, difficult and dark to reach places, but I try to deal with it. Roswell, 1947, I talk about that at great length in both of my volumes. The other events which are less confirmable, I still will touch upon. The Eisenhower meeting from 1954, I did mention in my first volume, there was so much more I could have written about it. If I ever get the opportunity to revise that first volume, I would probably deal with that at greater length. The Dulce legend, these are unconfirmed. There's quite likely massive underground bases, underground tunnel systems in this country, and I do believe that there's probably a lot of truth about the rumors of a massive base under Dulce, New Mexico. I have not yet been able to confirm that. So what I try to do with the history is make it clear what is fact, what we know to be fact. And if something looks like it might be true, I'm happy to mention that, but I have to do it with that proviso that it's not proven. And in a field as difficult as this one, it is absolutely essential always to distinguish between what we know, what we absolutely know is true, and what we think might be true. Because if we can't do that, we run some real risks and dangers of becoming lost in a maze and not ever finding our way out. And also in the process, losing our credibility and really spinning our wheels vis-a-vis the mainstream world. You see what I mean?
Yes, and
a long-winded answer to your question.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I haven't read your first, I don't know if it was the first one, but your UFOs and National Security State. I have not read that one.
Yeah, yeah, that's in two volumes. There's a lot there. There's over 1,000 pages there.
Okay, great. Then maybe I'll take a look. And the reason why I brought those things up, because in doing disclosure, well, my take is that they really won't really disclose everything. They may mention it, okay, yeah, they exist, and that kind of thing, but I don't think they're really going to mention some of the things that have impacted us, not only
right.
this generation, but, you know, previous generations. And as a matter of fact...
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. You're raising a crucial point here. I'm really so glad you mentioned this. Because, I mean, try, for all you ladies out there, to get a little bit pregnant. You can't get a little bit pregnant. Okay? Try to give a little bit of disclosure. There's going to be a tough thing to do. The powers, the guys, like the president, okay, the powers that be, sure, they're going to want to give as little as possible. They will only give this up when they are pushed to the wall by events around them, whether it's a WikiLeaks type event or a mass sighting. Something's going to happen, and it's going to happen within 20 years, my prediction. That's going to force this matter wide open. But when it does, that doesn't mean that the CIA is just going to walk away from the table and say, oh, well, yeah, we've tried this cover-up all these years, but hey, they found it out. Let's just tell them everything. Baloney, that's not going to happen. But what is going to happen is there are going to be a lot of pissed-off people in this world, and they are going to be fighting mad. And there's going to be a lot of researchers, not just me, a whole army of them, who are going to be all too happy to point out what it looks like. Crash retrievals, exotic technology that's been worked on in secret, you know, the deep clandestine black budget world. Dulce, maybe yes, maybe not. But a lot of other issues are coming onto the table all of a sudden. And the president may try to ignore them, but at what cost? At some point, I think it's very possible that that moment of disclosure will turn into a wildfire. That is why at the beginning of this interview, I mentioned the Arab Spring, which I think is a kind of model. Certainly what will happen with disclosure will be different in many ways that I can't even predict. But the fact is that this stuff happens fast. It happens powerfully. All the great political changes of this world, I mean, many of them at least, have been with lightning speed. You know, no one predicted the French Revolution even a year before it happened. They didn't think the French monarchy was a divine right institution that ran that country for centuries. And suddenly, like whammo, there goes his head. The king is gone, and they have a republic. The Russian Revolution, same thing. The Tsar ruled Russia as a divine right monarch for hundreds of years, and suddenly, whammo, he's gone. And no one predicted this. Even something as recent as the fall of communism. You know, I was in Berlin for 3.5 months during the period that the wall came down. It was the most electrifying time of my life. And the fall of the Berlin Wall 4 months earlier was not predicted. No one could see that one coming. And even like a month or two before, I don't think too many people really saw it happening. But then, boom, it was gone. Sudden change is a reality. Sudden, massive change is a reality. It doesn't happen by these little increments. So too with disclosure. This is a situation that is primed for massive change, really revolutionary change. And yes, you're absolutely right when you say that the powers that be are going to try to give this out by drips and drabs. But they are not the only game in town here. There's millions and billions of people on the other side of that line, and I really doubt that they're just going to be satisfied with stupid old platitudes, the same old garbage they've been hearing for year after year. I just doubt it. I hope I'm right on this. I hope that you know, my faith in the ability of people to get off their asses and fight, that faith is justified, and I believe that it will be. Once I've discovered one thing, yeah, a lot of us walk through our lives kind of half awake, half asleep about a lot of things, But when the moment is right, those light bulbs do go on, and we become aware. And once we become aware of a powerful idea, well, you know, how do you become unaware of it? I think that people are hungering for the truth. They don't always know it. They don't always realize it. But when the truth smacks them in the face, they're going to be they'll be awake, and they're going to discover that they need truth, that they need it all, and that's going to happen with this awesome reality that is just going to lead to one question after another after another. You know, think of it this way: the first week of after disclosure might be a situation where we're still kind of walking or crawling even before we can walk. But at some point soon, people are going to be asking, wait a minute, how have you been able to keep this secret? I mean, for realsies, guys, for 70 years, what does that mean about the mainstream media's relationship to the intelligence community? How has the mainstream media been this stupid all these years? I mean, they just haven't seen it. What's going on with that? It's going to be obvious that there's been major control of our society, of our media, by the intelligence and national security groups. It's going to be obvious that the same has happened in the academic world. These are going to be revolutionary moments. And that's only one aspect of how this is going to rock our world. Another is going to be when people start asking, wait a minute, so this is real, and Roswell was real, so what did you do with the Roswell tech? Have you guys really been studying it? What have you got secretly? Do you have your secret fleet of flying saucers? Are you actually going off planet like some people have suspected? These questions aren't just going to go away. There'll be a lot of people, increasingly more and more, who are going to start asking them. And the next thing you know, you're the president of the United States. You got a situation that's out of control. And that president's going to have to make a decision, by the way. He's going to have to decide, or she's going to have to decide, whoever it is, that who do I side with here? Do I side with my paymasters who put me into this position, basically, you know, the Illuminati, the Bilderbergers, Rockefellers, Rothschilds, right? Do I side with them and just deny, or do I take a chance here to make history and to do the right thing and be the voice of the people? You know, it isn't impossible. Great events can make great people. And something as great and momentous as the disclosure of the reality of advanced non-human intelligences here on planet Earth interacting with us, well, you know what? That can be a moment of truth for any political leader who really looks into their heart and says, this is it. This is my moment to do what I know is the right thing for history and for humanity. And I really believe that is possible. One of my main motivations in writing AD was exactly that, to show that, yes, it is possible. It is possible for a political leader to do that right thing and to fight the black budget world, to fight the group in the intel world that has taken this away from our responsible leaders anyway, to take it back in the name of the people and to right the wrongs that have been going on for so long. I really believe it. I'll call it my faith. It's not my knowledge, I don't know, but what is faith? It's a little bit hope and a little bit belief, and yes, I'm maintaining this. I think that it is possible that our leaders can do the right thing.
Yeah, I appreciate you giving that answer. I don't quite have as lofty a resolve as you do, and the president saying much of anything than he's told us.
Well, no, I'm with you on that so far. Yeah, I don't think certainly whether his name is Obama or Bush or Clinton or Bush before him, these guys are hired hands. That's how I look at it.
So, you know, and everybody knows what happened to Kennedy, so I think it's not going to come from there. However, thank you very much for your answer, and I appreciate you being on the program. It's very enlightening. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Thanks so much for calling in, Ralph. Bye-bye. Well, see, we have about 15 minutes left here, and I understand we have still no questions from the chat room, Purple Sage. If Tammy, if you could check and make sure that that's still current information. We are going to go to the next caller with a comment. Let's see, we have Katie. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. Do you have a question or comment? We're doing good.
Yes, I just wanted to say thank you so much. I actually just stumbled upon the website a few days ago. I bought Lavendar's book, The Quartz Crystals, Celestial Point of View.
Thank you.
And just found your podcast and have loaded it up on my iPod. I've been listening to these episodes nonstop for the past few days. And I just wanted to comment on not disclosing the UFO information. Someone said earlier that it would not only anger people into political action and make them question past events, but I think that it would also activate many more starseeds and lightworkers. And someone has made the comment that if only 10% were unified, a major shift in awareness would occur. And I believe that the dark forces or powers that be know that they are in the minority. And they're doing everything they can to survive. And from some of my own research, I believe that some beings actually survive off of fear and chaos, just as other beings survive off of light. So I believe that I know personally some starseeds or indigos that I'm in Tennessee, and they have been raised in an environment that pretty much bans or shuns any idea or belief that was not taught in the church or the Bible or seen on TV or, patriotism or a duty to their country, all that kind of stuff. So they haven't been activated and they don't believe any of this. So coming out with that UFO information, just disclosing that UFO information, I think would cause a major shift and a major influx in this activation. I also wanted to, one more thing. I have a biology professor who's doing some research on bioluminescence. And it's chemicals that give off light. And he calls this, there's a phenomenon called quorum sensing, and it's sensing how many others like you are around. So if you take the, a hormone sends out a signal, and it also has a receptor. So he used the example of in the depths of the ocean, an organism like a squid that has this bioluminescence that lights, but it's isolated. If a small organism is isolated, it's not worth its effort, or it's not worth it to spend its ATP or potential energy to glow alone. So it won't spend that energy, but the squid has receptors or a link to others of the same species. And the isolated ones are only emitting enough signal molecules to say that he's by himself. And then where there are more together in another location, they will find those receptors. And it's that idea of like attracts like. So once enough individual organisms have found each other and link up, they produce enough ATP or energy to turn on or to light up.
Wow.
And he even went on to say that, this is just, he's still in the research phases, but he was just sharing this with the class, and he said that once they produce enough of that energy to turn on, it turns on the gene that makes them light. I mean, just, if you just think about that in relation to human beings and light workers, or just in synchronicity of how you put out certain energy and you attract certain people into your life.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a wonderful analogy.
Mm-hmm.
Really strong precedent that exists in nature,
right.
which we are actually demonstrating now as starseeds. And Katie, thank you so much for finding the show. And don't listen to too many hours all in a row. You need to give yourself a break
oh,
and time to assimilate because your head could explode, you know?
know. But one more thing. He also said you can isolate a group or an organism and you can make them believe they're alone. I think that the powers that be know this, and they utilize the divide and conquer mentality, and they promote this fear and negativity, and that's how they're keeping everyone divided and keeping us from coming together and, you know,
divide and rule.
Changing the world.
Yeah, well, that's an ancient concept.
Isolate people.
Well, Katie, as long as there are people awake like you out there, they don't have a chance.
Right.
And we thank you. Thank you so much for coming into our community. I really your energy. I like your energy.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
I just wanted to say one more thing. I apologize. But one thing that just kind of helps me when I'm scared or worried about anything that's going to happen or the powers that be and any big disasters that may be coming in the future, that God or prime creator, whatever you want to call him, created both dark and light. He created both good and evil. And I think that what is happening is that our souls are on a journey to learn how to create and not to misuse power, just like as it Atlantis fell previously from a misuse of power. But our creator is teaching us how to create as he did and sharing that power of creation. So I think that we will overcome and change all these systems, and it's going to take some time, but it's going to happen. And I just thank you all for what you're doing, and I will keep listening.
Well, thank you, Katie, and thank you for calling in.
No problem.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's see. We have just a little over, I guess, 5 minutes or so before we're going to be wrapping up. We have another caller. This is Jeff, and I think, Jeff, you're on the air with Richard. I don't know that he can answer that question, but go ahead and ask it.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Richard. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you.
First, I just want to let you know I actually came into the show maybe about 15 or 20 minutes late. So my question actually, and I apologize for that, but my question simply is if you could just give a brief rundown again on your new book coming up, UFOs in the 21st Century Mind, as well as maybe speaking a little bit to After Disclosure Volume 2.
Yes, absolutely. I'll be happy to. This book, it's actually in the process of being written, and I'm not 100% certain on that as a title, but it's as good a title as I can think of right now, UFOs and the 21st Century Mind. It's my attempt to do a really nice overview and introduction to the entire topic of UFOs, ETs, and all related elements to it in a digestible single volume that's less than 300 pages. And as a result of doing this project, I've found that I'm really trying to approach it with as fresh a mind as I can. In other words, not going into this topic with the same old tired cliche-ridden approach of dealing with a litany of the UFO sightings. I mean, I myself have written about these at great length in my two volumes of UFOs in the National Security State, but I don't want this to be just another history book. I am dealing with history. I'm going dealing with ancient UFO visitation, as well as a lot of the pre-1947 stuff, and then through into our own era, yes. But also there's a lot of analysis, a lot of fresh analysis of it in terms of the political aspects, the cover-up, the deeper political aspects in terms of what I've come to call a breakaway civilization, but also a great deal of thought on the whole phenomenon of experiences and encounters that we humans have had with these other beings, both in the form of abductions, which may or may not seem as negative experiences, as well as very positive types of contact that people have had, and what that means. What that means about these other beings, what that means about us. Why is it, for example, that there are so many cases of apparent telepathic communication between us and them? What does that say about who we are and what we are and what they are? And then other things that I'll consider oddities, but they're related to the phenomenon, such as crop circles. I'll be writing quite a bit about that mutilation phenomenon. And then let's call them the vortices, whether they're the Skinwalker Ranch or the Gilliland Ranch or other places where there's many ongoing strange events that might include UFO, might include Bigfoot sightings, it might include other types of paranormal activity.
Wow, that sounds excellent. Thank you so much for your detailed response. I did actually just want to, I guess the show's going to be ending soon, so just want to, again, thank you for such passion and commitment you bring to the UFO topic. I have read AD After Disclosure, the first one, so I do welcome the second one whenever that might come about. So again, I guess you only have a few minutes left in the show, so I'll let you all take it from here. But thank you so much, Richard.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Jeff. And Richard just got cut off, so I suppose he'll be calling back in a moment here.
Oh, okay.
But it was just like 5 seconds, so he heard everything you said.
Oh, no problem.
And thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Okay.
Have a good evening. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye. Well, I'm sure that Rich will be calling right back in. So, okay. Looking for Richard. Well, how about, let me pick up another caller. Hello, Belva.
Hi, how are you?
Well, I'm doing just fine. We just lost Richard. He got cut off somehow.
I wanted to tell him about my flying saucer incident in 1950s, where I broke my fan belt. I was driving in GTD, and they came and gave me a new fan belt.
Right. Well,
so
I wanted him to know. Yeah. He'll be calling back in here in a minute here, but
what a great
in the meantime,
show.
Oh, it is. Richard is a great guest. He's so articulate and he's so accurate with what he says and very well researched as a historian. And
it's amazing.
I just love to have him on, and certainly when his new book comes out, which will only be a couple of months from now, we'll have him to come back on and give us all the information on how we can get it. And his website is there's two websites. One is Keyhole Publishing, keyhole like, you know, in a door, keyholepublishing.com. And if you order from there, you actually get a personally signed copy. And also afterdisclosure.com. is the site that he and Bryce have together, Bryce Zabel, of course, being his co-author. And we only have about 2 minutes here, so we're just gonna wrap it up here. Let me bring Lavendar on. So I know that she's been on mute here. Sorry, Lavendar, I didn't mean to have you on mute, but Richard was talking anyway. So. We want to thank everybody. We're sorry, I guess, that the chat room finally did get opened up tonight, but not without great difficulty. I know that I had a little trouble getting onto Blog Talk myself this evening, but fortunately the seas parted and we got on. So we'd like to thank you all, especially thank you to Richard, who doesn't – oh, here he is. Huh?
I'm so sorry. I didn't realize
okay.
I got cut off. I was in the middle of this long-winded answer that I was giving this gentleman, and I didn't know I was gone, and I don't know how much you heard, so I'm so sorry.
We heard nothing. We heard nothing, so I responded and thanked him for you and just gave your websites again.
My apologies. I did not realize that I was talking into a dead phone.
That's okay. I did that at the top of the show. I was talking with the mute button on, so, you know.
So sorry.
But it was a great show. It was a great show. I know that everyone really enjoys when you come to visit, Richard, and we'll be looking forward to having you back when your new book comes out. And we want to thank everybody. I know Sierra had to leave. And Lavendar, I know you're here somewhere. We will see you next week at the same time, 7 o'clock on Tuesday. Once again, Richard Dolan, AfterDisclosure.com, and KeyholePublishing.com. Thanks so much, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye, Richard.
Oh, bye, Lavendar.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Bye, everybody. I'm
okay.
Glad to be on. All right. You guys take
Thank
care.
You.
All right. Bye.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.